Now, the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Well, we made it to Monday. Football in the state of Arizona was not fun to watch this weekend. Welcome on into the Brad Sesmatt Show. I'm Jordan Spurgeon, filling in for the big guy. As always, we're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always, we appreciate their support. That's Desert Financial Credit Union. And yeah, this weekend was just full of L's in Arizona. The Arizona Wildcats fall to number 18 BYU. It was a good game. They end up losing in double overtime. Couldn't make the big play at the end, but they competed well. ASU got the brakes beat off them against Utah, 42-10. Sam Levitt did not play, but the defense just didn't do its job, and they got demolished by a former Saguaro Sabercat, Devin Dampier, who had three rushing touchdowns and over 100 rushing yards at the quarterback spot. And then the Cardinals, the Arizona Cardinals, fourth straight loss. This time Jacoby Brissett in at quarterback, but they drop to the Colts 31-27. So really there's a lot to take away. Over the weekend, the Suns played in China for preseason basketball. I wasn't watching. I saw a little bit pieces here and there. If you were, hope you enjoyed waking up at 4 or 5 a.m. to watch those games. But we'll have more as we get closer and closer to the Sun season. But sticking with football here on the Brad Sesmatt Show, I want to start with the Arizona State Sun Devils. And later on in the show, we're going to have John Wilner from Wilner Hotline talk a little bit about what things look like for the Sun Devils moving forward. But this week is kind of the make or break week for ASU. We don't know yet whether or not Sam Levitt will be healthy enough to play. He practiced all of last week. Thursday, he's listed as doubtful. By Friday, he's out. And Saturday, he's at the stadium, at Rice-Eccles Stadium, in a boot. So we don't really know the status of Sam Levitt's foot injury, what it was, what the cause was, what it is. And so that's going to be something that people are going to be asking about all week. Now, Sam Levitt's not the reason the defense gave up 42 points. Had he started that game and the team still got out physical, they still would have lost that game, maybe 42-21 or something, but they still would have been demolished against Utah. So I don't think Jeff Sims being the quarterback last week was the main reason for ASU just getting throttled in Utah. But if they want any chance of beating Texas Tech, who's ranked inside the top 10, who has been just obliterating opponents all year long, they spent $28, $30 million on this roster, mostly in the trenches this offseason. They already out-physicaled Utah, who just out-physicaled ASU. So it's a tall task for Kenny Dillingham and his staff this week. Obviously, whatever they did coming out of the bye week wasn't enough to get this team physically ready. And so if they want any chance of beating Texas Tech, they got to get back to the basics. They got to cut blocks. They got to tackle. If they can do those two things, and if Sam Levitt plays, they've got a chance. And if they want a chance to repeat as Big 12 champions and get back to the college football playoff, they're going to have to win this game. They already have one conference loss, a second one this early. It's going to be tough to come back. I know last year they got in with two conference losses, but they had a lot of things go their way at the end of the season. And the way that Texas Tech is playing, if they beat ASU, they're likely to run the table in the Big 12. There's always a weird game in the Big 12. We rarely see a team go unbeaten, but if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Texas Tech. And then you've got to look at the rest of the Big 12, Utah and BYU. The Holy Bowl is coming up this week. The winner of that game is going to be in a driver's seat to be the second team in line for a Big 12 championship berth. You look at Cincinnati. They're unbeaten at this point. They look like a team that could go on a run and be last year's Arizona State and make that magical run to a Big 12 championship. So I say all that to say that if ASU wants to achieve their preseason goal and get back to what they were last year, they've got to beat Texas Tech. It's plain and simple. If they don't, a lot of things have to go their way, and they have to run the table the rest of the way, and it's very difficult to see that. I've been saying since the offseason, 8-9 wins, that's a good season for ASU. I know the expectations were higher, but listen, last year, so many things fell their way. You know, we'll talk about it with John Wilner, but the injuries weren't as big of a deal last year. This year, they've been hit by the injury bug, and not everything is bouncing their way in the biggest moments. They play on the margins, and so this is what you're going to see. You're going to see fluctuations between 7, 10, 11 win seasons based on the roster, based on the way that the balls bounce. But Kenny Dillingham is doing the right things to get this team ready. I digress, though. The Arizona Cardinals, they're four straight losses for the Arizona Cardinals. I'll have Jody Jackson on after the break as well to dive deeper into that. But as we look at the Arizona Cardinals, what stands out to me, really the biggest storyline the rest of the way, it's pretty clear. You can see it. The writing's on the wall. There's a divorce that's going to happen with the Arizona Cardinals and Kyler Murray. It's bound to happen. It's tough to say because, as Arizona Cardinals fans know, when you have a quote-unquote franchise guy or at least a stable quarterback that you know is going to be your starter almost every single game every season, that is much better than going through a carousel of 10, 12 starting quarterbacks in a 4, 5, 6 year period like the Arizona Cardinals have done in the past. And it's hard to say you're ready to go back to that, especially with a weak quarterback class coming out of college this year. But I think it's time for the Arizona Cardinals. I think it's the best thing for them. I think that if Monty Austin Ford believes that Jonathan Gannon and Drew Petzing and the rest of the staff are the right guys for this team, it's clear Kyler Murray is not a fit for them. Petzing's offense does not fit Kyler Murray. He does not stand back under center and deliver balls the way Jacoby Brissett did. Now, Kyler Murray is a better quarterback than Jacoby Brissett. Don't get it twisted. But winning games with this roster at this time, Jacoby Brissett, probably the guy, and maybe he's a guy you can have be your quote-unquote starter during a bridge year or two. You're not going to win a lot of games in that time, but you're going to be able to continue to build the culture they're trying to build. Now, I'm not trying to rip on this team. They could be at 5 wins, but it's not a woulda, coulda, shoulda business. It's a how many games did you win? How many games have you lost? And so when we look at that potential divorce between Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals, I think it's real because not only would it become better for the Arizona Cardinals, but quite frankly, it'll be better for Kyler Murray. I think there's more in the tank, and I do not think he can reach his potential with the Arizona Cardinals. I know he would want to, and he talks about it, and he wants to see the new practice facility open up in 2028 and be here. I get that. But when you look around the league, there's a couple teams that he could be a really good fit for. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers, potentially. I don't know. Smaller quarterbacks in that weather, in that system, are not always the best, but you look at what Aaron Rodgers is doing this year and how they built the offense. Kyler Murray can kind of run a similar, you know, maybe slightly drawn back offense. And I think that's a place for Minnesota. If J.J. McCarthy is not the guy, I know he's been hurt, but it seems like they're kind of just rolling with Wentz because he gives them a better chance to win, as they're not rushing back J.J. McCarthy, who's kind of been struggling a little bit early on in his career. That would be a great fit for Kyler Murray to reach his potential. Kevin O'Connell is a quarterback whisperer, and he's gotten a lot of quarterbacks' careers turned around. Look at Sam Darnold and what he's doing now in Seattle after being in Minnesota. So honestly, it's better for both parties in the offseason if Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals decide to go separate ways. And it's going to be expensive, and you're not going to get a lot in return because of how much money he's owed, but it might just be the best thing for the Arizona Cardinals. But after the break, we'll have more on that with Jody Jackson talking about the Arizona Cardinals. And I'm here now with Jody Jackson. So Jody, we'll jump right into it. The Arizona Cardinals, 4 straight losses. Jacoby Brissett plays quarterback this past weekend, filling in for Kyler Murray. Looks pretty good. What are your just sort of general takeaways after this game against the Colts?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's disappointing to lose 4 straight games. And I think it just highlights when you go up against a team like the Colts, which, you know, they're a team that's rolling. They're probably, some consider them a top 5 team in the NFL. Certainly their record shows that. Mm-hmm. I think the only loss for them being the Rams, and generally they've looked really, really good. So it was a tough task. I think it puts a glaring spotlight on, you know, again, losing that game to the Titans, maybe coming up with a win at the end against the Seahawks, you know, all of those things. And but what I liked was Jacoby Brissett bringing the passing game to life, igniting the downfield passing game. We just saw more belief in the fact that that can all happen. And, you know, I felt good for the receivers. I felt good for Drew Petzing to see that part of the game work, because for many times with Kyler Murray over the years, that part has looked hard. And we've all walked away saying, you know, why does it look so hard to put together drives and it's because I think it is hard sometimes for Kyler Murray. He has a different skill set. He is electric at times with the ball in his hands. He can certainly make those throws. It's just that, you know, for reasons we've all discussed many, many times, you know, he doesn't do it as much as we saw Jacoby Brissett do it. And it's not the fact that he hasn't had games like that. Kyler has had some games like that, but we just haven't seen that lately. We certainly haven't really seen it this year. So I liked that. I liked the fact that those receivers were involved. You know, still a running game. You know, they're really banged up. You know, they don't have James Conner. They don't have Trey Benson. They do have the O-line back together, but I just think they're missing the explosiveness or even a consistent run game. I think defensively, the real big question is because I really felt like the defense had played pretty well all season long. And they weren't getting a lot of help from the offense, and that's just the way of the world. You know, when your offense doesn't help you out, comes down to the fourth quarter, sometimes you have a lapse, and it's real glaring. But yesterday it was a little more glaring for me, some of the issues in the fourth quarter on defense. And so you have to wonder, how do you fix that? How do you get pressure when you need pressure consistently? And how do you perform on the back end when it matters the most in the fourth quarter? And while I like their corner, I like Will Johnson, I like Max Melton, I like those guys, but they haven't been getting it done as a defensive secondary. That includes Buddha, Jalen Thompson, on and on. In those moments that matter the most, save for the Saints game when they did make the game-saving play. So yeah, I mean, a lot of issues still, but some good things that I hadn't seen before that happened yesterday.
You just sticking on the Kyler Murray, Jacoby Brissett thing for a moment here. Just one more question in there. I don't think anyone's trying to say that Jacoby Brissett is a better quarterback than Kyler Murray, but I think it is fair for people to say he might be better right now for this team. It's the first time we've seen 300 yards this season from a quarterback. I don't think Kyler's done it in a couple years now. Where do you kind of stand on that as far as where this goes moving forward? I don't buy into some people saying, oh, even if Kyler's healthy, they're going to bench him. That's not going to happen. I don't see that. But do you get a sense that maybe they're okay if Brissett's the guy going into the Packers this week or?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's intriguing for sure. And the fact that Kyler Murray, if that foot sprain, a mid-foot sprain, doesn't sound great. It's not like it's just, okay, you know, we haven't gotten really a lot of info on the injury, to be honest. You know, so I think, you know, whether we find out more this week or we don't, if he's not healthy and can't go, if he's not completely healthy, then, you know, I think everybody's fine with seeing Jacoby Brissett out there. But you're right, Jordan. I'm not saying, and I think a lot of people that have watched a lot of Cardinal football, like, nobody's saying Jacoby Brissett is the next guy that needs to come in and save the day. He's certainly not the future at his age. You know, he's been in the league over 10 years. He's not trying to be the future. I just think he's trying to, that's the thing. That's what I think we have to get back to is, how do you win games? Like, if it's Jacoby Brissett, if it's Kyler Murray, maybe it's a combination of both of them. You know, I don't even, at this point in time, I think I'm like a lot of people and the fans and the players on the team. You know, you just want to win games. So whoever gets a chance to win the game. And I think it bring up a issue which has been always lingering there. When Kyler in 2021, when and that off clean, and he was under hot, was catching it. Happening in the passing game, we didn't question it as much, but I think over the 7 years, there have been some big questions about Kyler, and I think that's the lesson. What are you going to do next? And how do how do you ignite, and how do you use these receivers, including Trey McBride, to the best way possible? So, yeah, I think Jacoby, you know, I think it's easy to keep him in there and say, hey, let Kyler heal up a little bit more. If this doesn't sound that might be just 1 week. But yeah, as for the future, it's still a little bit muddy in my eyes.
I've said it on a couple things now. It does seem like a divorce could be in the future, and it might be better for both parties eventually. But the other question is, who do you turn to after that? Cardinals fans know when you get rid of a really good quarterback that is good enough, it's hard to find even those guys. You could just go through a carousel for years and years and years and not find a stable guy like they've had. Looking at the schedule now, obviously year three, Gannon and Austin Ford, people expected, a bigger season, a more successful season. It's looking more and more like that's not going to be the case. But what is sort of, do you think, a reasonable expectation going forward throughout the rest of the way? They could have 5 wins by now, but they only have two.
Yeah, it really hurts. That's where you really look at it and say, again, in the business of wins and losses, those close ones really hurt. And I think they proved a lot to themselves, though, in the Colts game. I think that they proved that they can hang with a really good team. I think we do know that they can hang. It's just, can they finish? So that makes this Packers game huge. A must win if we want to, you know, really make it a lot of drama. Why do I say that? Well, it's a home game. And I know there are going to be a lot of Packers fans there, but when you say home game, you mean, no travel, all the things that make you comfortable. And in theory, and coming back and maybe redeeming yourself after that Titans game in front of the home crowd, that had to be, I wasn't at that game, but had to be excruciating to watch that kind of slip away. And and then the Packers are a team that I hesitate to say this because I think Jordan Love can be very explosive and can be really good, and we've seen that movie before against the Cardinals just recently. But I think that they can beat them. I think they're not a team that has like a few of the other teams that the Cardinals are going to face, including the Rams. Those teams, they look very unbeatable at times, and the Packers look a little more like a team with some holes. So yeah, the schedule's not easy. We know that, but I think that effort on Sunday told me a lot about this team, that it's going to be a battle every week, So I mean, record wise, I don't know. I mean, I guess before the season, I was hoping for something like 10-7, and maybe just with those close losses, maybe is it now? Are you looking like, does 8-9 look optimistic at this point? I don't know. I mean, I'm still going to be positive. I believe that there are, but again, I think you have to juggle that quarterback situation. And I think it, there is going to be a problem if you put Kyler Murray back in there and he struggles. And to me, everyone, including, again, I have to point to the receivers, the O-line, all of it. Like, if you don't put the guy out there that can give you the chance to win, the team is going to question that, and they're going to know that. And the coaches know that too. So that's something that's got to be monitored.
Last thing then before I get you out of here, Connor's coming off a bye. What are you looking forward to about this week's game?
Well, the bye hits different as the mom of a football player too. It's not just like fans are like, oh, it's just a weekend, I can do some chores. I watch my son and his teammates at Western New Mexico. The bodies heal up, the mind gets a little free, and it's nice. It's very nice. I understand it.
He got to come home too, right? Is that what I saw?
Yes, he came home, and it was nice to have him be able to just be home, have a couple home cooked meals. I actually baked a lot of things, so that's all here. If I have gained 5 pounds, it's because of the bye week, right? I'm baking all that. So no, it's exciting. It's good. I mean, their season hasn't gone how they've wanted it to, but they feel good about the rest of the games coming up, and hopefully go on a little run here. And he's performing well, and he's, hopefully he continues to do that. Their offense is pretty good. Their passing game has a lot of really positives. Not just Connor, obviously the receivers, the offensive line, the whole group. So we look forward to a good run down the stretch here.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I'm definitely excited to keep hearing great things about Connor out there. And Jody, thank you so much for taking the time today. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Jordan. Have a great week.
Thank you. We'll be back after this timeout. Joining me now, John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. And this weekend, John, was a really weird weekend of college football. But for you, you were out on the ground, out at a couple games throughout the weekend. Tell us a little bit about what you saw.
Try to take advantage of the Big Ten Friday night scheduling. Got a double dip in. I was at Washington, Rutgers in Seattle on Friday night and then drove to Oregon, Indiana, and Eugene on Saturday. And it's good to be at games, but it also makes it hard to see everything else. And certainly the Husky game was very, it was really a weird scene because the stadium, I don't know, was probably only about two-thirds full because the Mariners game five. It was terrible timing for Washington. They had their homecoming game. It's on a Friday against Rutgers. And it's conflicting with Mariners game five. But good performance from Washington. Oregon, Indiana was certainly very revealing. There's no doubt in Indiana now at this point. They are arguably the Big Ten favorites. But I was able to kind of keep close tabs on what was going on with the Arizona schools against the Utah schools.
Real quick on Washington, too, since he's from here, Damon Williams Jr.,
yeah,
to see him in person out there. What was that like for you? Because he's really just on a tear right now.
Well, he is, and it was a record-setting game for Damon. He set UW's single-game record for the most total yards by a quarterback. I don't remember the number off the top of my head, but he threw for 400. He ran for over 100. So he was at like 540, 550. He broke the record set by Marcus Tuiasosopo. So a little context. Rutgers is terrible defensively, right? Iowa scored 38 points on Rutgers, which is like anybody else scoring 70, you know? But also, equally true, Williams is, it was terrific and is playing very well. He's in a perfect offense. Jed Fish, you know, it is designed to bring out the best in Damon Williams. He's got an elite receiver. He's got an elite running back with him. They are very good offensively.
And are you surprised they're not ranked? 5-1, only loss coming to number one Ohio State. It was a game where they had a lot of chances. They couldn't finish drives from what I remember seeing. But are you surprised they're still outside the top
Yeah,
25, or does
that's
that
a
feel
big
right?
story in Seattle. I am a little bit. I am an AP voter. I do have them ranked this week. Part of the problem is you can look and say, well, that really haven't beaten anybody, right? They played one good team and got thumped. Ohio State beat them badly. But Ohio State is going to do that to 120 or 25 schools, right? Ohio State's defense is next level. So, you know, you look at all the other results on Washington's ledger, and yeah, they probably deserve to be ranked. I have them 22, maybe. But, you know, and part of that is because they played a poor non-conference schedule. They've so far, you know, Maryland and Rutgers aren't very good. They'll have some opportunities here coming up, including this week. They go to the Big House for the big noon game.
Oregon, Indiana, too. You know, I think in the offseason, a lot of people were wondering who's going to be the next Indiana sort of
Yeah.
Cinderella run to the CFP. It kind of seems like it's them again. I mean, they're even better than last year. You can't really call them a Cinderella story, but Indiana is last year's Indiana, it seems like, but even better, right?
Well, they are better because they're better on the lines of scrimmage. I mean, they outplayed Oregon in the trenches, which to me was the most surprising development. They got steady pressure on Dante Moore. Oregon could not run the ball consistently. And Indiana was able to move the ball when they needed to on the ground. I was very impressed with their play at the line of scrimmage. That's the biggest difference. Fernando Mendoza is an upgrade over Curtis Rourke. I think he's, you know, modest upgrade. The real difference is how good they are up front. And, you know, the Oregon situation is interesting because you kind of have to reassess that Penn State game, right? That does not resonate the way it did at the time, given the way Penn State has played. And so you're left thinking, maybe Oregon's not that good. I mean, they're good, but maybe instead of Oregon being a top five or six team, maybe Oregon's really only a top 15 team. Now, we don't know that, but we do know that Penn State's bad. And we do know that Indiana went into Eugene. And if Fernando Mendoza hadn't made a bad decision, turned into a pick six, that's 30 to 13, Indiana, not 30 to 20.
Speaking of Penn State, when's the last time a team that you thought, or many thought, that would be ready to get over the hump and get a national championship? Has this happened? Three straight losses. They fire James Franklin. They're sick of that. They don't want him around anymore. I can't recall a time where I've seen it. I know last year Florida State had high expectations and that sort of folded, but I haven't quite seen it like I've seen it with Penn State. Have you?
I haven't. I haven't. But the thing is, it's 2 weeks ago, they were like a play away from beating Oregon. And if they win that game, they're number one. In 2 weeks, they went from almost number one in a game everybody was talking about as a high level. These are two playoff teams, all this, and he's gone. And you know, you can make the case, you can understand why Penn State would do it, but you could also say, goodness gracious, what an overreaction, right? $50 million for the buyout. It is an incredible development and well reflects this day and age. I mean, look at who's got UCLA's fired their coach, Arkansas's fired their coach, Penn State, right? There's going to be more. Wisconsin could be next, with Luke Fickell. I mean, Oklahoma State fired their coach. Florida could be next. There's going to be more. And if you think in the broader context of the coaching carousel, last offseason, there weren't many. I think only four power schools fired their coaches because everybody was saving that money for the revenue sharing. Now everyone's figured out how they're going to pay for revenue sharing, and they're thinking like, oh man, we got to be good. We can't deal with losing. This is going to be a wild coaching carousel next 2, 3 months. There's going to be a lot more coaches fired by December 1st.
And it's definitely going to be kind of like 2 years ago where Saban retires and it's this domino effect of all these things. It sounds like, already some jobs open. Penn State firing James Franklin's going to do that. Early sort of takes, who are the names that you're looking around and hearing about? I see a lot of Matt Rhule. I see a lot of Kurt Cignetti. A couple of people mentioning Kenny Dillingham. I don't know if I see that, but where do you lean on that?
Dillingham, I don't think ASU fans really have a whole lot to worry about there.
Yeah.
Now, there might be one or two jobs that come up where you're going to be a little bit concerned, but I would be very, very surprised if he left. So the Penn State names, Kirk Cignetti, obviously he's done an incredible job in Indiana. He's from Pittsburgh. Matt Rhule is a Penn State guy. So that's why they are immediately connected to that job. And Penn State is right now top of the food chain job, right? And I don't offhand, I'm not sure if there will be an opening at a job that is more prestigious than Penn State. I mean, that's easy top 10 job, right? But we'll see. The SEC is going to have, they've already got Arkansas open. There's going to be more in the SEC, and that's where you'll see some real marquee openings. The one that I think is worthwhile, I don't think Michigan is going to do something on Sharon Moore, but man, there's a groundswell now about his performance. And if they end up this season like 5-7-ish, there'll be a lot of buzz about whether Michigan's going to fire him.
John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, joining us here for a few minutes, switching gears on over to the Arizona school. So we'll start with Arizona State. Just got the brakes beat off them, out physical against Utah, but now they have to quickly turn the page and get to Texas Tech, who out physical Utah. I know Utah's Devin Dampier was banged up that week, yada, yada, but Texas Tech was more physical than even Utah. Generally speaking, I mean, this is kind of it for ASU if they want to repeat as Big 12
This is
champions,
it.
right?
This 2 week stretch is it for them. Absolutely. The ASU thing, you have to account for the Leavitt injury, right? Obviously, in how you're assessing that loss. My view is the unexpected was the way the defense played, right? If you had asked me before the game, knowing Leavitt wasn't going to play, all right, how's this going to unfold? I would have said, it feels like Utah 27-17 or 27-14, 24-10, right? You could see ASU's defense keeping them in it for a while and eventually just kind of folding under the weight of a lack of offensive help. I did not expect ASU to get run over like they did. It's almost like Leavitt's injury and absence had a psychological effect on the defense as well as the offense, you know? And I guess you can understand that, but the Texas Tech game is gigantic for them. I'm not going to guess at whether he's going to play or not at this point because I thought he was going to play until what, Thursday? I thought he was playing last week. But yeah, their defense has got to show up. Texas Tech is very physical. They spent $28, $30 million on this roster, and a lot of it was devoted to the lines of scrimmage, which was very smart of them. Now, the other thing is Baron Morton's, their quarterback, is banged up and is day to day. So you've got each quarterback is hurt to a certain extent. I think ASU will bring everything it's got emotionally, physically, and I would expect it to be a close game. But yeah, ASU loses. That's it for the Big 12 title and for the playoff because at three losses, they're not going to get in as an at-large.
You know, I think it's a fair point, you know, speaking on how Levitt being out affects the defense. All week long, you see him practicing, running around
Yeah.
the ones, and then all of a sudden you get to Thursday, it's, oh, he might be out. And then you get to Saturday, game day, he's in a boot. And so maybe the defense at
Yep.
that point was like, hey, Jeff Sims, we love him. He's a good leader on this team. We respect him, but we know we're gonna have to get more stops than if Sam were playing. And so it almost felt like watching the game, they were just pressing a little
Yeah.
bit more. And then Utah, I mean, honestly, they're going to do that to a lot of teams.
They
Devin
are.
Campier is the best running quarterback in college football at this point, and so it's no surprise they were able to do that.
Nope.
It's just surprising how often they were able to do it.
Yeah, it is. And people, fans underestimate the importance of complementary football, right? The way the defense affects the offense and vice versa. And you see a lot of times when an offense is struggling, the defense holds up. And it's happened to Utah over the years a lot. The defense holds and holds and holds. And then, I mean, in fact, it happened to Utah against Texas Tech, right? I mean, that was a pretty close game. And then you could just see the defense kind of gave out at the last 15, 20 minutes. And that is a challenge a lot. I think it was a challenge for ASU, right? When you can't move the ball, it's three and out, six and out. Your defense gets worn down. They have got to bring it, though, because Texas Tech is at least as big a challenge as Utah was. Being at home will help, but they cannot just let Texas Tech run the ball at will.
Bigger Big 12 picture then. So let's say Texas Tech right now, they're in the driver's seat to be one of the teams in the Big 12 championship. If they
They
were to
also have the
win.
easiest path. I would add, after ASU, their schedule is by far of the contending teams, their schedule is by far the most manageable.
So if they win, because I agree. I think if they win this game, even if they were to lose this game, I still think they would end up in the Big 12 championship, regardless. Who do you really see as that second team trying to compete with Texas Tech? We look at the AP poll, and it is a pretty big separation among the Big 12. And
Yeah.
Texas Tech is clearly the best team, but who do you think is that second
It's
team?
interesting because I would have told you, well, Iowa State, and then they've lost two in a row. Or I would have told you Arizona State, but then the Levitt situation, all that. I would offer up Utah. The Utah BYU winner, and the Holy War is this week. Utah BYU winner, I think, will be in there. And Cincinnati's interesting. I mean, you talked about in the Big Ten, who's this year's Indiana, and there's been a lot of discussion in the Big 12, who's this year's ASU, and it might be Cincinnati. They've already beaten Iowa State. But if I were going to guess, I would say it's the winner of the Holy War is going to be the best, best bet for second place. BYU is pretty good on offense and very good on defense. We'll see how their freshman quarterback, Bear Bachmeyer, holds up in the Holy War. But that would be my guess. It is, but it's typical Big 12. It's mayhem.
Looking down in Tucson too, so the Arizona Wildcats double overtime loss to number 18, or previously number 18 BYU. But they played really well. When you look at the bigger picture, I know now they're 1-2 in Big 12 play, 4-2 on the season. What are you making of this team? It feels like a team that's closer to what they were in 2023, but maybe not as good as that.
Yeah.
But definitely better than last year for sure.
Yep, I think we can clearly define Arizona as halfway between Arizona 23 and Arizona 24. They should have won that game, but the fact that they went toe to toe with BYU, huge improvement over what would have happened last year, right? They are good enough to beat the bottom half of the Big 12, and they're not good enough to beat the top teams in the Big 12. Fortunately for them, they've got enough of the bottom half on the schedule, I think, to get two more wins. They should get bowl eligible, right? If they're bowl eligible, if they're 6-6 and they're competitive in these games, I think Brent Brennan will be okay. But that's, to me, that's the challenge. And it's not just, it's learning how to win a game like that. You've got the lead over BYU. How do you close it out, right? That's what they've got to learn. If they don't learn it, they're going to have a trouble against, the two or three teams on their still on their schedule that are clearly better, better equipped than they are, including ASU, right?
I think that's going to be an interesting one, including the Territorial Cup at the end of the year. If ASU continues to get banged up,
Yeah.
Arizona has, enough to make that game competitive, and maybe
Yep. Oh, for
especially if it
sure.
were a Jeff Sims in that game.
The thing about ASU is it's on the everything's on the margins, right? They've and we've seen that. They got a 3-point loss and they got 2 3-point wins already. There's three or four plays in three or four games that are going to decide ASU's trajectory. And injuries is also part of it. I thought they were very healthy last year relative to other teams. They got the benefit of good health. Does that happen a second time? Doesn't appear to be. Do you get the breaks on those handful of plays in those games? It's hard to get those twice. It's not like ASU is so talented that they can just win those games on talent, right? And so when you're playing on the margins at that level, the difference between 10 and 2 and 7 and 5, it's tough to do it 2 years in a row. It's very difficult, especially in a conference like the Big 12, where the talent difference between 1 and 16, well, or 1 and 15 this year, is pretty small. So we'll see about ASU.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad you brought that up because I kept saying in preseason to people, it's listen, I get the expectations are to run it back and go again. But last year, they very easily could have been a 7 or 8 win team. And this year, it looks like that's very much realistic. There's still a shot at 9 wins, maybe 10 if they pulled off a win against Texas Tech. But like you said, it all comes down to those
It
margins. And to have
does.
that
And
fall your way is
the
tough.
thing that ASU has going for it in that regard is that nobody understands that better than Dillingham. And he is accounting for that in how he manages the team and the culture. And that gives them a chance to try to repeat what they were doing. But he totally gets that, it's everything is razor's edge.
Yeah. Last thing before I get you out of here, John, I haven't had a chance to really look, but as you look at the top teams in the country, I think almost everybody agreed on the top three relative to the order: Ohio State, Miami, Indiana. Do you think any team this year is elite? Because I mean, we're seeing so many teams just falter. Or is this one of those years where it's just going to be who's healthiest at the end and who will be able to survive? Because it doesn't seem like there's an elite team this year.
No, there's not. And I would throw Texas A&M in there. I have my AP poll or ballot was Miami. I've had Miami number one for many weeks. Miami, Ohio State, Indiana, A&M. And I don't remember who I have fifth. But I agree with you generally. The team that has, to me, the potential to get to that next level is Ohio State. Their defense is absolutely dynamite. And what they've been able to do is let Julian Say and their rookie quarterback kind of ease into the role. The defense is so good that they haven't had to put a whole lot onto him, and they're kind of letting him develop the confidence. If he is playing like a sophomore or junior by December, then they're going to be awfully hard for anybody to beat because that defense is so, it's better than it was last year. And they've got the best player, Jeremiah Smith. So if Saban can evolve into a quarterback who can make big plays and avoid big mistakes in the playoff, to me, that's the team that I look at and think, from where everybody is now, who can get to that next level? I would say Ohio State's got the best chance.
Don Wilner, Wilner Hotline. You can find all his content over on our website at sports360az.com. John, thank you so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Jordan.
Yep, we'll be back after this timeout.